Could you just give your name and your age just to mark the interview?
So my name is Tristan Nitto. As you may hear from my accent, I'm French, and I'm 39.
Great.
So why don't you tell us what you do at Mozilla, how you got started working for Mozilla?
I'm the founder and currently president of Mozilla Europe, which is an international affiliate of the Mozilla Foundation. I have been involved with the Mozilla project since the very early days, because I was working at Netscape. I started at Netscape in 97, and in early 98, I was the one to announce the creation of the Mozilla org thing, the project, to the press and to my Netscape colleagues in Paris and in Europe overall. And I wanted to work on the project, but even though I'm an engineer, I'm focusing on marketing and PR and general organization, and they didn't need someone like me back then, especially in Paris. So I had to wait a long time and do something else at Netscape until in 2001, where there was a position to become a technology evangelist in order to let the world know about the Mozilla project and the fact that there would be a new browser in town, and so web developers should be ready and make sure that that website would be compatible with the Mozilla browser or Netscape 6 at the time. And in 2003, things became more serious in the sense that everybody at Netscape was let go. With the colleague in France, we decided that we could not leave the project like that, you know, just dying, or because it was going through difficult times. And so we decided to create Mozilla Europe, which is a non-profit organization. And since then, I've been leading this organization. That's it.
So what are some of your day-to-day activities?
I try to have the project go well in Europe. So
you manage marketing?
Yes, I focus on marketing and PR because these are two things that my engineers colleagues don't want to do. Because they're basically doing better, harder stuff on, you know, somewhere, some other pieces of the project. And basically, well, yes, I do what other people don't want to do. and marketing and PR just fall into this category. I do general organization. One of our achievements is, for example, to have a localized website in 21 European languages, because of course for us making the Mozilla project successful means that you have an official website, but it's not in just one language, it's as many languages as you can, and so we started with 4 and now we're up to 21 languages for an official website. But we also make sure that the various localizers, that people, you know, that translate a product into their native language are doing things well, are efficient in their job. They're all volunteers, so it's, and they all, you know, speak a different language. They're all in different countries in Europe. So it's interesting. It's difficult, but it's very interesting. And we also make sure that we have local communities that are talking to our user base and doing support, help, animations. Trade shows, for example, so stuff like that, representing us there. It's very interesting.
How do you generally communicate with the people that you're working with in these various countries?
Mostly by email and instant messaging, and sometimes on IRC. But I'm not a fan of IRC. Or actually, I'm too big fan of it, which is when I start using it, I spend too much time on it, so I refrain from using it because it's too time-consuming. It makes me too reachable, if you will, and I end up not doing enough work. So I tend to use email the most, and then AOL Instant Messenger, and then RIC, depending on my workload.
What kind of groups do you work in? I mean, what size are the groups for the various projects? Do you work in large groups, small groups, on your own?
Our localizer, we have two sets of localizers, and for some people these overlap. So we have product localizers and we have website localizers, and it's in some cases it's the same people. Basically it's a set of 30 people, I would say, mostly on the website localization project. And also I interact with my US colleagues for interaction, you know, new content on the website or PR stuff or new releases. So it's, I tend really to be a link between the US and the various groups in the countries. So I filter and I relay information between the two. So there are things that they don't need to know, and so I save it for me. But I make sure they know about important things like release dates and stuff like that.
How is it decided? Sort of who's in charge of the localization communities?
I don't know. Well, I tend not to be really involved in the product localization. Now we're lucky enough to have with us Axel Hecht, which is one of the board members of Mozilla Europe, and Axel is spending his time on making sure the product is localized in every language, not just European languages, but Europe is the top region where localization is important. It's with a single region you need like 20 languages. So he may be able to answer this question better than I do. I spend more time with people who localize the websites, which may or may not be the same people that do product localization.
And who what is sort of the working relationship between the Mozilla Foundation Corporation here and Mozilla Europe? And why is there the division, and why do you see that as necessary, and do you see any obstacles to having that division?
The situation has its roots in the history of the project. In summer 2003, when everybody from Netscape was let go, Peter van der Becken, which is the person who helped me start Mozilla Europe, and myself, we had some spare time for legal reasons. We were, well, in France at least, you can't fire someone just like that. Take your stuff and we won't see you this afternoon. It doesn't work like that. So they have to give you several months' notice, and after that, you have the vacations you didn't take and various things that end up. In my case, it was 8 months where I didn't have, where I was paid to do nothing, basically. And I wanted to, well, I could have found work, you know, a job, and put that money into my pocket. And it was certainly an option, but I didn't feel it was really an option, or not a good option, at least. The Mozilla project was really into trouble by then, and we really wanted the project to survive and, you know, and be well. And the state was too big. You know, it's really the choice of people. You know, it was the future of the web. We could not let it go like that and take the money and do something else. Anyway, we were not interested. So I did have a few job interviews, and people finally, the interviewers ended in understanding that really my heart was Mozilla. And so Peter and myself started Mozilla Europe, and we didn't know where we were going. Actually, we just wanted to carry this thing and let's see where it goes. We knew that we at some point we would need some money, behind these 8 months. We were not really concerned by that because we knew after 8 months we would have, there's a program for unemployed people where you, at least you don't have to sell your house and all that. But we didn't want to abuse the system. And so we knew that we could do anything we wanted during 8 months. But after that, we really had to look for a job. We started looking for jobs. But it doesn't necessarily take you, 50 hours a week to search for a job. So you have spare time and we work hard. So it's actually, it leaves you with more than that. And I don't remember what your question was.
No. I was asking you about how the organizational structure of Mozilla Europe emerged and relates to the U.S.
So, getting back to your question is, we wanted to work on a project. We thought that it was important to have the Mozilla project not be too US-centric. Every project I've been involved with when it's done in the US, it tends to be US-centric. I mean, for obvious reasons, right? And there are major differences between US and Europe. There are subtle cultural differences, and Europe is actually just a concept. It does not really exist, frankly. It really sucks at this point, by the way. People see Europe as a country, and it's definitely not a country, right? Like Texas is very different from California, and it's different from New York. You see, it's really a different culture. In Europe, it's even worse, and most of all, you have language barriers. I speak English, I speak French, I can read Spanish, I don't speak a word of German, and there are Dutch, Italian. I cover maybe 15% of the European population with the languages I speak. So it's totally different, and it's hard to get that when you're in. Well, you get that when you're in Europe, but where in the U.S., where to be successful, you ship a product in English and then you're done. For Europe, it's totally different story. When you cover four languages, you're just at the beginning of it.
Is language, do you think, the biggest reason why there needs to be a Mozilla Europe?
Well, it's one of the top reasons. One of the other reasons is that we have developers in Europe, and they were orphans at the time because Mozilla Foundation, which was just created, had very little money to spend. And so what they did is hire a few key people, and they hired them in the Valley for efficiency reasons. Even though I think we were good in Europe, we were not considered as options. I didn't want the European developer community to be disbanded because of that. So we needed a structure to have people relate to, to keep the flame alive. Can I say that? You see what I mean?
How separate or integrated is the developer community in Europe and the developer community in the US?
They are tightly integrated. There is a single Mozilla project which is actually a single CVS repository, if you will. And there is nothing like that in Europe, and we don't want to do that. There is just one single Mozilla project, and I mean, it was obvious from the start from us, because it was that way before, and we don't want to change that. But there are advantages in meeting people in real life, you know, sharing a beer, having dinner, meeting. So meeting in real life has, you know, its importance. And so this is the reason why we have been doing Mozilla Europe developer meetings even before Mozilla Europe was created, because it's important, and it's relatively inexpensive to have someone, you know, everybody meets in one place once a year. You can afford that even if you're a student. So it existed before Mozilla Europe, and this is a project we carry on, and we think it's worthwhile to have such an event. So this is the kind of thing we do, but we, in the end, we all work for the unique Mozilla project. And if Mozilla Europe exists, it's just because that in summer 2003, Mozilla Foundation was really too busy to envision, well, they had so many things on their to-do list, like finding offices, securing top contributors, opening a bank account, finding money, you know, just surviving. So that conquering Europe or maintaining a presence in Europe was so down on their to-do list that we knew that they weren't going to do it for quite a long time, and so we decided to do it. So having a structure and a community in Europe was important, but at the same time, and I see this, you know, it's a small personal opinion or related to my job, I knew personally that I could, where there were not many people in Mozilla Project in Europe that would be able to do marketing and talk to the press about the project, and I think it's extremely important. If you go back to the Mozilla Project mission statement, which is to promote choice and innovation on the internet, which is a great mission. It's a gorgeous statement. You have to achieve this. You have to create a product. The product has to be good, but that's not enough. You know, also the product has to be used by people. This means that you have to tell the people to use it, that they need to know it exists, and they need to download it in order to use it, and you need to have market share if you want the project to be successful. So it's not just about delivering a product, it's making sure it's used by millions of people. And I knew that nobody in Europe would be able to do that but me, for two reasons. Because either they're really hardcore engineers and they're totally not interested in doing PR, or there are people who don't have the credibility in the Mozilla project to do it. So I was really the intersection of these, you know, two populations. Someone who could do PR and someone who was involved already in the Mozilla project. And there was one single person in Europe to do that. And it was me, and I had 8 months free ahead of time ahead of me, so it had to be me.
So why do you think Mozilla's been able to attract so many users? What do you think the answer is?
The
particularly Firefox.
The product is amazing. It is a really, really good product made for the masses. I've been trying to convince people around me to use the Mozilla Suite, which was before Firefox. And many people wanted to try it to please me because I suggested that you really want to do that and it's important, blah, blah, blah. And they were not comfortable with the Mozilla Suite because it was too complex, too many options to buy engineers for engineers, basically. And Firefox is totally different in this regard. It's very nice UI, many features, mostly unnecessary for the average person, have been removed, which was painful at sometimes but it was good to see these features go, because it enabled us to make a product simpler and appealing to many people. And then one of the other reasons is that Microsoft was asleep at the wheel for years, and the users were not happy and not seeing any new stuff in IE. While the web has been evolving significantly, and not in the right direction, like spyware, adware, pop-ups, phishing, and all that. And Microsoft has not been evolving for 5 years, and really there was demand on the market for a new browser, and nobody was there to address it. Almost because Opera was there, but their advertising model, business model based on advertising, was not good enough to succeed. So Firefox came there, and I don't know how to say that without sounding.
So it sounds like marketing has a big thing. That would be the major difference, you think, between Opera and Firefox, is the marketing effort?
Yes. Yes and no. We had amazing assets in terms of marketing. The fact that we are a non-profit, where now things are a little bit different, but the foundation and Mozilla Europe being non-profits, we really do stuff for the good of the public, not for money. And as I said, Microsoft was not there, abandoned the people, and everybody felt like that, or at least our target was understanding that Microsoft did not do what they should have done, which is releasing new versions of the product every year or every 2 years. So people were unhappy, and we had that community delivering a great product. And if you have you can use this in marketing to make it a success, and I'm very proud of what we've done with that, because we had very, very limited money to achieve this.
Do you see a difference in the needs of European users versus, other than language, let's say, than U.S. users? Put another way, do you need to market Firefox differently in Europe than you do in the U.S.?
No, not much. Well, no, for the essential, it's the same. We have Europe is actually, as I said, a set of markets instead of a single market. So you have places, I think about Spain, for example, where our market share is pretty low. where we will need to address specific issues that we don't have to address, for example, in Germany. Because in Germany, we're approaching 30% market share. In France, it's 18. I mean, maybe these figures are a bit generous, but if you think there are three percentage points too high, even though it's pretty good figures. For example, in Spain, there was no what we call technology evangelism. The thing I was involved in earlier in the project, which is to let the web developers know that there is a browser, an alternative browser, and that they have to make sure that the pages they build also work in Firefox and Opera and Safari and every other browser on earth, so that they have to use web standards to be compatible with all the new modern / alternative browsers. This effort has not been done by anybody in Spain or Italy, for example, because Netscape back then just has not done that in France, Germany, and UK. So these three markets are doing okay in terms of market share. While in Spain and Italy, for example, it has not been done, and so Firefox is still incompatible with too many websites. And after a while, the user, is not happy with the quality of the experience, which has nothing to do with the quality of the product itself. It's on the other end. But still, the impression the user gets is that Firefox doesn't work or doesn't run well. So this is the kind of thing we need now to address to also save the web in Spain and Italy, for example. But this is also for historical reasons. So they're small markets, not really interested for Netscape at the time. And anyway, I was busy with three countries already, so...
Have you noticed sort of any differences of opinion or tensions, or just differences in culture between, people who work, the developers, people who kind of work on the code, and the people who are more involved in marketing and PR and kind of the more business end of things?
Well, it's hard to say, because until recently, there were basically two categories of people, engineers and me. I mean, and Mitchell Baker, and just a very small number of people. We were important, but who were also tightly integrated with the community, we've been there forever. So we know each other, we know how engineers think, and all that. So there was no problem until now. But now the management team is growing and the number of marketing people is increasing. There is a risk there that marketing people don't understand how the community works, for example. But so far, what I've seen, it's heading in the right direction. I'm not particularly concerned. I mean, generally speaking, I could be concerned because I know, these are two different populations. But so far, what I've seen is that the marketing people we have hired are very curious of the community thinking and all that, and they're willing to listen, and they're not arrogant, and I'm glad to be the link between the two, because I know the community and I know the importance of marketing and all that. So I think there's a chance that we do pretty well, but I keep my fingers crossed, because it's you never know in advance.
Why do you think people volunteer to work on Mozilla projects?
I think everybody has got his own answer to this question. So I just could give you mine, but I'm not sure it's that interesting. Anyway, I already told you it. I just could not do otherwise. I had to do it. Otherwise, I could not, you know, see myself in the mirror in the morning. So I would hate myself, or would not sleep. I would hate to have let such an opportunity gone because I didn't care, or because I just cared about the money. Everybody's got his own answer. What I love is working with smart people. It's the people in the Mozilla project. On average, they are amazingly smart. So this is one thing. It's a bit challenging because you won't be able to bullshit them, you know, or anything like that. Because this, so it's you gotta know what you're saying, right? And so this is one part. Another part is the technology itself is gorgeous, and also the fact that it's a product used by dozens of millions of people in the world, and also because it's really for the public good. And the internet, or the web, if you will, is an amazing thing. You know, it enables you to do communication, to meet with communities, to share culture. If I don't know if you heard about Wikipedia, Wikipedia is wow. It's not perfect, but it's just wow. And if the web was not there, there would be no Wikipedia. And commerce. Commerce is important too. And so the web is amazing. I tend to compare it, and maybe it's a bit exaggerated, but I tend to see it as an opportunity for humanity, pretty much like the invention of printing, the printing press was. You know, there was before the invention of the printing press, and after. Before that, there was no point in learning and reading and writing because there were no books. There was the Bible, like a few hundred copies in each country. That was not much. And so there was no point in learning how to read and write. And after the invention of the printing press, things were completely different. You had books, you had knowledge spread over the world and all that. And I think the web is changing the world also. So maybe on a smaller scale, but still on a very large scale. And it's very impressive. But at the same time, the web is now 12 years old. It's still the early stages of the web. And when you think about it, the web was created in order to get rid of incompatibilities between the various systems. It was invented in Geneva by Tim Berners-Lee. And Tim Berners-Lee has invented it because in the research center where he was working, scientists from all over the world came there to work together, but they all came with their own computer, which was incompatible with the others, and they could not share information across computers because they were incompatible. So he has imagined a way to read and write reports or pages that could be ran across the network from one machine to the other, even though they were not compatible initially. And this is the whole idea of the web, it's the whole beauty of it. You can write a page on Macintosh, have it served by a Linux system, and read by a Windows PC, and in theory, at least, you don't care about that. You don't care about the machines, you care about the information itself, which which is the important part of it. So this is the initial vision of the web. But in 2000, Microsoft in 2001, Microsoft shipped IE6 and then disbanded the IE development team. And at the same time, 95% of web developers were writing web pages that were optimized for Internet Explorer. Well, I tend to say limited to Internet Explorer because it's the way I see it. And at the same time, IE was not developed anymore. It's totally crazy that you do something universal and it ends up in the hands of a single company that is not willing to develop this thing anymore. It was unbearable to me and unacceptable. This is the reason why I've been involved in the Mozilla project.
The Spread Firefox website says that Spread Firefox was founded on the same principles of community involvement that drive the development and testing of Firefox. How do open source principles influence Mozilla marketing techniques? And does the marketing of an open source product differ, do you think, from a commercial product?
That's really two different questions. Spread Firefox is a very impressive project which has achieved amazingly well, helping us really quite a lot. But at the same time, I don't think this project is fully baked. We still have to figure out many things with this. So I have a question. When is this going to be published, if it is?
It will be on our website. The plan is shortly after. Yeah. But we don't have to publish it right away. We can keep it in a dark archive.
Very frankly put, I don't know how to say that. I think spreadfirefox.com is at a moment of its history where it has to change or go to the next phase, like next level. It has done wonderful things in the past. Now it needs to renew itself, and I hope it's going to happen. So it's too early to judge whether we have achieved, where we're going to achieve this, going to this next level or not. What it has done in the past, such as the New York Times campaign,
mm-hmm.
Man, that was huge. It was one of the smartest moves ever made in terms of Firefox marketing. So really, for this, it was an example of what we could do. But we need now to, boost spreadfirefox.com. I want it to evolve in order to get this creativity again, which is a bit missing currently. So.
Would you like to see more newspaper ads and that more kind of traditional?
No. I want to see creativity again. It's New York Times don't do it twice. It's or you do the Super Bowl. You don't do the same thing another time. It's pointless.
Where do you see that new creativity coming from? Where do you think that will come from?
I don't know because we're inventing it. And by the way, I'm not really involved in Spread Firefox myself. But we need to invest. Well, first, it's hard to distinguish the good things from the bad ones, especially when you have 800,000 members who speak, right? It's a lot of noise, and not too much signal. And so the more noise, the harder it is to get the signal. So I don't know if it's doable, you know, if we can achieve that. But I'm sure there are interesting ideas within Spread Firefox that are expressed. The harder part is to make them happen.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should throw in more management or more manpower at Spread Firefox to make it a better tool. And the other question was,
does the marketing of open source of an open source product differ from a commercial product, and how?
Yes, it does differ in the sense that we have a community to help. This is also something that we are currently inventing or discovering. I don't think there was open source marketing or successful open source marketing before what we did with Firefox. Well, maybe it existed, but I didn't really see it. We have been successful in making Firefox a brand and a success in the market, but we have really targeted the technical groups. Now we need to go further, and this is something else we have to invent. How are we going to go to that next level? Is this something we can do using community marketing? I don't know. What is certain is that we have to go to the next level. We want to get more market share, always that notion, you know, of promoting choice and innovation. People have to use the product in order to be powerful in the market. But one of our big challenge is to not forget the community, not to leave it alone, not to send the wrong signals that, like, you're not interesting anymore, we have you, we need to go to the average consumer. That would be a terrible thing to do. And it's not easy, because we will have to have two voices. One, for the community, we love you, we care about you, you're very useful. And they are. I mean, it's just not a matter of still being fair with our early supporters, but in the field they're very useful in recommending Firefox, and also we have to appeal to the average user. We have to convince them from downloading Firefox and running it, and this is totally different, and it's not going to be easy, but I hope it's doable. Not going to be easy to be using two different voices at the same time. If you see what I mean. It's I don't know about that in the US, but certainly in Europe, some of our contributors don't like advertising. And to some extent, they think that Microsoft is associated with marketing, you know, bad marketing practices. And that if we do mainstream marketing, we would end up being like Microsoft. So it's going to be interesting over time. But we'll see.
Have you ever contributed either as a volunteer or and I guess as an employee to any non-Mozilla open source projects?
Yes, I am a Wikipedia contributor. A very confidential part of Wikipedia, which is the Wikimedia Commons, which is a set of documents that are to be used in the articles of the Wikipedia Encyclopedia. So it happens that I'm a amateur photographer. So I take pictures of, you know, animals, buildings that are used as a reference. So I took, you know, photos of the Eiffel Tower that have been selected for the Eiffel Tower article and also the Paris article in French and English. And I took a photo of a red panda, a firefox in a zoo, which is used, you know, that kind of thing that I do. And I live in Paris, so I took a lot of pictures of the Parisian monuments, including Notre Dame and all that. So it's useful for articles. It's a real pleasure because you don't have, you know, responsibility with that. So if your photography is bad, you don't care.
how do the being a member of both communities, how do you think how are the Mozilla community and the Wikipedia community, Wikimedia community, similar, and how are they different?
And also, I've been involved with other things other than Wikipedia. But my answer will be the same. One of the things that make Firefox very special, and it's something definitely I did not anticipate, and I'm glad I was wrong in that, is that Firefox is generating revenue. And it's amazing. You know, we have not, well, the open source community has not found a good way to make money and make its things sustainable. We have different, you know, business models, if you will, but Firefox has created the ultimate business model, which is generate quite a lot of money without compromising, and it's we're very lucky, because you know Wikipedia, for example, you know what they do is amazing, but they I think they have one part-time employee in the world. That's all. I mean, it shouldn't be like that. I'm sure they need, you know, staff just to make the servers running properly, and, you know, dealing with paperwork and all that. And they don't have that money, and it's too bad. I'm so involved in a project called .clear. .clear is a blogging tool. It's made by a friend of mine. It's under GPL, and it works perfectly with all browsers. It respects web standards, which is important to generate, you know, content that is compatible with every browser. And on top of that, it's important because it helps people publishing, you know, blogs and have the citizen have its word, you know, in cyberspace. And so far, it's been the effort of one single guy working 80 hours a week, including his day job, to make it happen. Plus, like, three guys managing the forums and all that, but it's one single person carrying most of the project without making money out of it. It shouldn't be that like that. I understand that a blogging tool is good for the web, but they should be, or maybe I'm just a helpless romantic, but it shouldn't be that like that. Maybe it's something you will see during this interview, as I tend to think that things shouldn't be like that. This is why I get involved.
How do you define a successful open source project? What elements or practices do you see as necessary for developing a successful open source project?
I don't know. I don't know how to define success. Well, for Firefox, I know, because we have that mission statement, you know, and we know what the challenge is. So market share for us is important. For other projects, I'm not sure. And in some cases, market share could be bad for the project itself, in case, you know, it's not structured properly and all that. For getting back to DotClear, for example, the number two ISP in France has starting publicizing the fact that it would be offering DotClear to every user of, you know, of the ISP. And the DotClear author surprisingly said, you know, it's a terrible idea, I don't support it. You can do anything you want. It's, you know, HTML code, so if you want to use it, you go use it. But as a person, as the main author, he said, you know, that's a totally bad idea. And so the ISP has stopped proposing it, and it actually never happened. And maybe it was a good thing, because otherwise the structure of the project would have collapsed under the load of potentially millions of users, and they were not ready, you know, because they didn't have any legal structure or anything like that. It would have been a curse more than a blessing for the project to be used by millions of people that don't know what it is, people that would have expectations on the projects and all that. I know. I mean, what I say is probably meaningless to you in this case. And I did not totally agree with what the author said by then about success. But yes, maybe success is not a good thing, or it depends what you want to achieve. For Firefox, market share is part of the of our goal. But for DotClear, it depends, you know, when you write a code, what you want to achieve. And in this case, I think it would more have been a distraction rather as a sign of success. But getting back to your question, there are one of the lessons I've learned is that when a leader decides to quit, he has to find someone else to replace him or her at the head of the project. This is maybe the number one lesson in having a project successful. I've seen it too many times that someone does something in the open source movement, gets burnt out, which, like I told you, the lack of business model is in many cases making that happen. And so the person quits and the project dies. And it's bad, because people were relying on it, and they even if the source is open, it's not as good as having an active community. It's also about having a community, because the next person in charge will very likely to be found in the community, and you need to have you need to treat your community well, and this is where the ego thing gets into the way. It's hard to be able to have, you need to have an ego to start a project, but you probably need to get rid of it to have the product running over time, if you see what I mean. It's And a strong ego is at the same time a good and a bad thing. It's good at the beginning and it's bad over time, if you will. Well, maybe.
What allows someone, if a leader leaves, gets burned out, what allows someone else from the community to become a leader? How does one get from just being a member of the community to rise to a leadership position in Mozilla or in open source in general?
There is no ready-made question answer. Sorry, to this question. It depends. I'm sure. Well, I know that are some modules in the Mozilla project that are currently without an owner, and it's bad. So I don't think we have the answer to this one, even for us who are a successful project. For a person from the community to become a leader, it's probably something you need to prepare. The person must be visible, must have shown his interest in the project. It's something you do over time. It's not like, okay, I'm going to quit. Who's going to replace me? It's not going to work this way, because maybe someone will raise his hand and won't be able to deliver. And that's bad, because you have a failed leader who is preventing someone from taking leadership. So it really needs to be someone that you have been working with and that has been demonstrating his skills and, you know, eagerness to have the project move forward. So, it's the way I see it. Maybe it's just my way of being.
Do you have any examples of those kinds of transitions where someone has left and someone new has had to take over and how that happened?
I think it happens all the time. Whether I can give you just one example right on top of my head, considering the jet lag, is another story.
That's okay.
Forget it. Yeah.
Well, what if anything do you think Firefox and the popularity of Firefox will do for the open source software movement as a whole?
Well, I don't know what it's going to do, but I can tell you what I hope it's going to do. I hope it's going to demonstrate to Joe User that open source is actually able to deliver great quality products. So I think, or I hope, that we're showing the way, you know, leading the open source movement. I hope that people like OpenOffice.org or Wikipedia, which is in a sense an open source movement, you know, project, even though it's not producing software, more MediaWiki, which software is just a, you know, something that comes on top. I hope we can demonstrate to the world that open source is able to deliver great products. I cross my fingers. We're not there yet. I think we need to achieve better market share for me to sleep better at night. But yes, this is going to be a major improvement. And I hope we're going to change or influence IT and force big players to play nicely, we've seen, for example, Microsoft opening up a bug database for Internet Explorer 7 the last week, and many people say it comes directly from our Bugzilla database. And I think it's good. I mean, more transparency, more quality assurance, better quality of products, better security, and all that. This is something we all need, right? And even if you decide to not use open source software. This is something you can ask to your proprietary vendor. I want quality, I want a feedback system, all that. So yes, we're also influencing, hopefully, the proprietary world.
Great. I think that's all we've got for you. We'll let you off the hook. I just before we go, is there anyone else that you think we should, outside of kind of the big people that we already know about, the people who are here, and kind of the bigger names in the field? Is there anybody who you think has an interesting story to tell, maybe in Europe, that we would want to get in touch with, that we might not know about?
Yes, but I'm not sure he's going to accept, so I'll tell you his name. Peter Van Der Becken, V-A-N, space D-E-R, space Becken, B-E-K-E-N. Peter is the person who has created Mozilla with me. He is quite shy.
We're also planning on doing some IM.
He's here, and it's going to be easier if you catch him, I think, and then lock the door. I think Peter has been a contributor as a volunteer for quite a long time, back in 99, I think. And has been hired by Netscape. Maybe we'll tell you the story.
Great.
And he's been a volunteer when he was given the boot, like me, like everybody else, actually. He's very on the volunteering side. He's going to be, I think, quite... Well, he's an engineer. He's quiet. But he may be interesting for you to have a very different perspective from mine compared to mine.
Great, thank you.